Mr. Cocker of Reel 4. So, tell me a bit more about life in the Mediterranean. Were you actually based at Gibraltar?
What is that? Excuse me. Gibraltar was the base for the Forsyth, which was renowned.
You mentioned that, yeah?
Yeah.
And what was it like when you were in harbour at Gibraltar?
When you went to shore, there was just the main street, and the other bar there, you could get a drink if you wished to drink. There was shops. There was also, if we played football, by the canteen, he had a concrete football pitch which we played football on. Some of the lads went over the border to get nylon stockings. I don't know where they went to, but I never bothered myself. But there was one young communication rating used to go and bring them back for everybody. So I bought a couple of pair off him for me two sisters and give him a sip of me shot for his trouble.
What about the rum ration when you were old enough?
Yeah.
Tell me, what was it like? How did they issue it? Why was it so important?
Well, what used to happen, particularly on the Renown, they had a big barrel with God Bless the King on it. And they had... what used to happen, the officer of the day used to come up with the rum in a keg with a lock on. The master at arms would be there, and the Jack Dusty, as we used to call him. The marine butcher was there, and he used to measure the water and throw it in to the big tub. And then the Jack Dusty would open the key and empty the rum in to the vat. And then the butcher would get two big scoops with his sleeves rolled up, and he'd mix the water. So you got two in one. Two water, one rum. And they'd stand in line with the mesh fannies, and the rum bosun of each mess would get his measure for the mess and take it down.
How was it issued to you?
Well, when we went down to the mess deck, in each mess the rum bosun would have a measure. That was like a plastic cup with a little handle on. And that was the measure for the two in one. And he would give you that in a cup or a glass, whichever was available. And each man would have his rum. His rum issue. Now, in the case of Splice the Main Brace, which we had a couple of times on the Renown when the King came, they always spliced the main brace in the evening time. So you got your second issue about 7 o'clock at night, and the people who were underage, they used to get lime juice instead. Yeah.
But what about sippers? Are there any traditions of, you know, sippers and birthday things? Do you have any of that?
When it was a chap's birthday, the whole mess used to give him sippers.
What was sippers?
You just give him your tart and he'd just take a sip out of it and give it you back. You know. But when he went up, in our mess, there was 26 people, so if he's getting 25 people giving him sippers, he's having another rum or so. You know.
Now, what about any hobbies? Do you have any hobbies?
Yes. I used to make out of matches, like some yachts and ships, but some of the lads were quite good. They'd make models of proper destroyers and ships and out of wood.
Now, how did you make yours? What was your method of doing it?
I used to have cardboard for the base, and then I'd have some matches and the glue, and I'd stick them all round the cardboard and so form the outline of the ship. And I made quite a couple of yachts. They were very good indeed.
And what would you do with them?
I just kept them on the ship and I took a couple home when I went home on leave.
Any other hobbies people had?
Yes, there was a stoker there. He was in civvy life. He was a tailor, and he used to make suits for the lads. There was also a Geordie seaman who, in the civvy life, he was a barber. And he used to cut your hair for threepence. And he was so good at cutting the hair, they christened him Sweeney Chad. And he used to say all the money he made from cutting the hair, he was saving. And his girlfriend, who was a lady hairdresser, when the war was over, him and her were going to open a ladies and gents hairdressing up in the Geordie land. Yes.
Now, you ran a firm, didn't you? Tell me about that. That was a laundry dobie firm. Tell me about what it was.
Well, it was. There was this chap from Manchester. He was older than me. He had a badge. He was a one-stripe. Able seaman.
You were just still an ordinary seaman?
I was a young AB, but I wasn't old enough to have me stripe. And this lad, he was courting a girl from Edinburgh. And he wanted to save up so that whenever we got leave, he could go and see his girl and have a good time with money. So we went to see the commander. Commander Elkins was his name. Could we have permission to run a dobie firm? And he said to us, go away, make a list of the prices you charge and give it back to me and I'll stamp it. And if I agree with the prices, it'll be put on the notice board. And we became an official Dobian firm, Ginger and I.
Was there more than one on the ship? Or was that just for your mess?
No, that we'd do it for anybody who came along. But we'd done quite well.
Now, how did you do it? What equipment did you have? What was the system you used?
Well, the system we used, we'd get all the gear, take it down the bathroom, and I'd have my buckets, he'd have his buckets, and we'd have this Pussisard soap. And we'd give it a good washing with the Pussisard soap and the rinsing and everything. And we really made a good job of it. Even with the hammocks, we used to scrub them and make a good job of them. And the hammock, the bed covers from the hammock. And we'd take it up to the drying room there. And there was a lad from Liverpool named Jack Hanna. He was in charge of the drying room, and everything he had, he'd check the names, and he'd write it down in his book, and it was all under lock and key. And when you went back, Jack would have that neatly wrapped up, all dry, nice and ready for you to take away. Yeah. We'd done quite well at this. We got up to a point we had £20 each saved up. That's how much we were.
That's a lot of money, then.
When they weighed up, we were only charging a penny for a towel, a penny for a collar, and threepence for a hammock bed, and, say, ninepence for a hammock, which was all canvas. So that was the dearest, the hammock.
So it was a lot of work,
but we had a lot of money, £20, and it was coming quite handy when he went on leave. And we'd done this for quite a while, Ginger and I.
So you're going to tell a story about the washroom?
Yes.
While you're on your way to Iceland. I know it's a bit out of order, but it doesn't matter.
Well, what happened was, we used to always go down the washroom and do it. And we used to pick a Saturday afternoon, because when you were going to Russia and you were in Iceland waiting to go up to Russia with the convoy, everybody used to get their head down on a Saturday afternoon, either in their hammocks or on a mess table or a mess stool or in a recreation space. But this particular Saturday, for some unknown reason, everybody was in our bathroom and we couldn't get in to do the dobying. So Ginger said to me, let's go down the boys' bathroom and do it in there. And I said, no, you'll never get away with it. I said, because It's in the other locker flat, their bathroom, and on top of that, it's next door to the Chief's PO's bathroom. So they're bound to see us, and we'll be... Anyway, he talked me into it, and we went down, and we no sooner got in there than the RPO came in, the regulating petty officer. And he said, right, up top, got our hand. We went up before the officer of the day. And he gave us commander's report. So we were the first ones on the Monday morning up before the new commander, whose name was Edward Rainier Conder. And when we went before him off caps, he looked at us and he seemed to know the answer before you told him. He said, why didn't you ask the boys' instructor, could you go in? At least you'd have a leg to stand on. And I said, I knew he wouldn't give permission, sir. That's why I never asked him. So he said to me, you're honest anyway. And he turned on Ginger then. He said, you've got a badge, you should know better. You've led this man astray. And he said, I'll have to punish you, but not in a way. But before he said that, the master's arms was on our side. He said, sir, for all the number of men that's on this ship, there's not enough room in the bathroom for the men. So the commander said he agreed with the master's arms, but he still had to punish us. So he said, I'll give you 1 hour to do all the boys' dobying in the boys' bathroom tonight. That was our punishment. So the boys' instructor got all the boys to get the dobing out and give it to him, and he made sure that we did all the dobing for them free. That was our punishment.
It wasn't too bad.
Wasn't too bad, no. Yeah.
What were conditions like? What was the Arctic convoys like?
Yes, the issue of the first one we went on with an extra blanket each. And we got extra underwear. And we were told that to keep all our clothes on, and if we ever had to go in the water, with the water being so icy, it would best to go in with all your clothes on, even your duffel coat, until the water got used to the temperature of your body, and then you could take your clothing off almost at a time. But fortunately, it never happened to us.
Was it cold?
It was cold. They used to have to switch the hydrants off on the upper deck so that no water would drip, because the guns used to hoist up and the guard rails.
You've got a picture of it.
I've got pictures to show that.
6-7 foot of ice.
Yes. I've got pictures.
6 or 7 inches, sorry. Of ice.
I've got pictures to show that, yes. Yeah.
Were you still in the
transmitting room?
Sorry,
I was in the transmitting room for the first two convoys. Yes.
So you wouldn't see much of what was going on.
No. Then later on, I got back on the pom poms again.
Prefer it on the pom poms.
I preferred the pom poms because it was in the open air and you could see what was going on.
Did you ever have to fire the pom-poms in action?
Yeah, oh, I...
When was that?
We fired them on Russian convoys and on the Malta convoys.
Well, which one do you want to take first? What do you remember of the incident?
The Malta ones was the main ones, because you're under more attack there. With them having most of the North African coast, they seem to have the planes scattered round so they could attack you from different areas.
And what were you doing on the pom-pom? Were you on the loading or...?
I was on the loading at first, and then later on I become the layer.
And what do you remember of loading?
When I become A3, I was a layer.
I know that. But what about then? What was it like loading while you were under attack on the pom-pom?
Oh, it was heavy going. You had to have your wits about you, because you had to make sure you had the right amount of ammunition in each tray so that one gun wouldn't run out. And it was fast. You had to really be quick. It was a good job I was fit, because you had to... There was one big locker between the two pom-poms, the port and starboard, you see, and that supplied both of us, that locker. And as I say, it fired so quick, you really had to be on your toes to keep it manned.
Did you ever hit anything, your pom-pom, then, I mean, you know, when you were loading? Would you know what you'd hit?
You would have known, but we never hit any. There was... We did shoot three planes down, but that was with the 455. They were higher up. They were out of our range. But the 445s hit them and brought them down. They actually hit two in one action. And they were in the med signalling them, but we wouldn't stop. The commander said, there's U-boats about, we're not stopping for them. But we... Never stopped for them.
How did you qualify as an able seaman? Do you remember how it actually happened? What did you have to take an examination for that?
Yeah, it was just more about steering the ship, knots and splices, a little bit of wriggling, like such as splicing and that. But it wasn't as hard as a leading seaman's course.
And when did that happen? After a year?
After a year, yeah. Yeah.
Was the Renault a happy ship?
Yes, very happy.
And what made a happy ship for you?
I think it was... What made us happy was... Everybody seemed to get on together. The lads didn't... We're from all corners of the United Kingdom. And yet, no, they all seemed to have that one thing in common. They either like football or playing hockers, or some would go ashore and... have a drink when the time came, you know. But there was always that happy thing with it. And when we were leaving the ship, there's only two of us left us to go through for aid, too. That was McCoy and myself.
Okay. So who do you think was responsible for that? Was it just a coincidence the crew was so nice, or was it the good officers, good leading team, or was it
everybody? Even the officers, like... Commander Ebrahim Conder, he was a fair man. He was what we call him a seaman's man. He knew everything. He listened to everything, and he was always on the upper deck watching anybody taking part in the boxing or anything like that. And as I say, he used to run the tombola with the master at arms.
What about the skipper? Who was that? Was he as influential, or was it more the commander?
It was more of the commander. You'd only seen the captain when on divisions on a Sunday, or if you went before commander for a request or defaulted, that was once a week every Thursday. But the commander was the man. You was with him all the time, you see.
Who was the captain? Do you remember?
The first fella was a Scotch fella. He A ginger fella.
So you didn't even know the names, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Anything else about your time on the Renault that you remember?
What I was going to say about it, this is how we knew that the North African campaign was coming off. It's a funny story, this, but it's true. I was ready, it was a Friday afternoon, we were going ashore to play football for the quarter deck, and I had my football gear on.
This is a gym.
No, it's Scapa.
Sorry, right.
And I had my football gear on, my naval shoes on, and me carrying my football boots. And the commander was passing my locker on his way up to the bridge. And Able Seaman Halliwell from Bootle was his runner. He had the telescope in his hand behind him. And the commander said to me, "Where are you going, Cockrum?" I said, "I'm going ashore to play football, sir." He said, "You're not. You're coming to sea with me." So we had to get our gear on and get ready for leaving harbour, falling in for leaving harbour.
You mean the whole boat was, the whole ship was going?
So when we round up on the upper deck, we being a full quarter deck man, I was a quarter deck, back aft, lined up, and we looked. The whole fleet was going to sea. We knew it wasn't going for a shoot, a weekly shoot. And there it was, all the destroyers, the aircraft carriers, HMS Rodney, HMS Nelson, ourselves, Duke of York.
Was it an impressive sight?
It was a very impressive sight. And we knew, and we were at sea, and on the morning, Sunday morning, the captain gave us these medals for being runners-up, partnership of playing football. And he said, I hope you use the same skill and courage as you did in the things that to come. So later on that morning, the captain came over the channel and he said, he'd opened his orders, his secret orders, and we were going to land in North Africa. And that's how we knew. That's how we knew we were going to North Africa. And when we actually got to North Africa, HMS Rodney and us, the renown, done the bombardments of Algiers.
What do you remember that?
We'd done the bombardments, and I learnt later on that the Broke, a destroyer, another one, had gone in Algiers, and had actually, she'd been hit in the engine room by the French artillery, and later on she sank at sea after being hit in the harbour. But we were also told during the bombardments at night that there was a fort off the coast manned by the Foreign Legion, and that had surrendered during the night of the ice of the white flag. Yes, the Rodney and the now we'd done the bombardments. And what else I remember was, as we were patrolling off the coast of a daytime and night time, our bakery, the baker made bread for all the destroyers. And what used to happen of a daytime, one destroyer had come abreast us, and we'd fire a rifle with the cod line on, and they'd get it, and we'd tie the bread, and we'd give them enough bread for the whole ship's company. So every day the renown kept all them destroyers supplied with fresh bread during the North African campaign while we were at sea. We were at sea for actually about two weeks, that campaign, yeah.
Anything else you remember from your time on the Renown?
Twice we took Winston Churchill while I was on the Renown.
Tell us about carrying Winston Churchill.
The first time was we were going to Halifax, Nova Scotia to pick him up. Apparently the Anson had taken him over there to see President Roosevelt. And we were told when we were going across that we'd only be in a day and straight out, pick him up and right out. And the Marines man in the after guns, because he was staying in the Admiral's quarters, him and his staff, he also had his wife and daughter Mary with him, who was in the ATS. The Marines had to wear gym shoes when they were closing up of a night, so they wouldn't be too noisy at closing up in the turrets, waking them up. Anyway, when we got to Halifax in Nova Scotia, they told us it was a dry state. There was no beer sold there. But we stayed there 2 weeks waiting to pick Sir Winston up. And when we went ashore, if you went to, there was one place sold liquor, and if you showed them your paybook, You got a month's supply in one go. Well, we couldn't bring it back to the ship, so it was no point in us getting any. You weren't allowed to bring drinks to the ship. If you did get that amount, you'd have to go to somewhere to drink it. But what happened, in Halifax, there was a barracks there belonging to the Canadian Navy. And we used to go up there and line up to get a drink there. That's how we got a drink in Halifax.
And what happened when you picked him up?
When we picked him up, he came aboard in like a tug. And he had all kinds of food that the Americans had given him. Tinned soup and everything. And that was all loaded aboard. And when it went off, and we went to Greenwich. And when that went off, do you reckon it went ashore into... and he was giving it to all charities, for instance, all that food. There was boxes of tin soup and tin meat and various things. But that's what Sir Winston done with it. It went ashore.
Did you ever hear him speak, or did he address the ship's company, or speak, you know, did you ever have any contact with him? I know you've got photographs of him.
No, he never spoke to us. He kept more or less to himself and the officers. But the next time we took him was, it was dead funny, this. We didn't have any idea what was happening. We went round to Devonport. We went up Plymouth Sound and into the bay. And we tied up just alongside Breakwater Fort, where I was going to go to do my AA2 training later on. Sir Winston was coming by train to Devonport, and he was coming out to meet us in a boat, because we're only just inside the Breakwater. We didn't go right up Devonport Harbour. Anyway, he came to join us, but before he came, there was a motorboat came alongside of a destroyer. And I, being a quarter deckman, I was back aft. And by the gangway, there was the officer of the day, quartermaster, petty officer, who was a petty officer, like, corporal of the gangway, a marine. And this stoker run up after the destroyer. And he said, "I want to meet our kid, he's aboard here." And the marine just grabbed hold of him, and he said to the coxswain of the motorboat, "Go and get this man's bag of hammock, he's coming with us." So he was taken prisoner and kept aboard us. The motorboat went back, picked his bag of hammock, and he came with us.
Why?
And what happened, well, this was because we were taking Sir Winston's out. Although he hadn't been met his brother, he hadn't spoke to anyone really. But this was how shush it was. Anyway, when Sir Winston come on, we up anchor and away we go. Well, the idea was we were supposed to take him to Gibraltar, and he was supposed to get a plane from the RAF and fly on to Malta. When we got to Gib, there was no plane, so we had to carry on to Malta. And on the way to Malta, we wondered what was happening. On the well deck, there was a big, long box, wooden box, and a marine guarding it all the time with rifle and bayonet. And none of us knew what happened. And this went on. Anyway, eventually we went from Malta to Alexander, where he went ashore, and he was going to carry on to see Stalin.
You just dropped him at Malta, though?
No, no.
So you took him on to Alexandra?
Yeah. And
then that was for the big conference?
Yeah. And apparently, now none of us knew what was in this box. And it's only a couple of years ago I got to know, I was in the RNA in Wallasey, and my mate Nick Carter, who was a stoker on the Renown, fetched the paper in. That was the sword of Stalingrad that we had on the renown that Churchill was going to give. It had all jewels in the handle of it, that's why. And none of us knew it. You know, it's